and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Yeah.
Brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
How about that?
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
Let's get him. Let's get him hard.
Pedro Fernandez.
Better grab me quick before my knees give way.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios in San Francisco, California. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. 35, no, make that 36 plus years now of being often imitated but never duplicated. Welcome to Ring Talk. My name is Pedro Fernandez. I am your host. I'm also an award-winning writer, former four-time Golden Glove champion who happened to make it to the Western Olympic Trials back in 1984 and finished on my feet against a formidable number 9 ranked Vincent Webb. Straight up, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, of course, the longest running fight show in history. We'll be hearing from the greatest this hour. That's right. Muhammad Ali will join us. A bit controversial, a bit off the wall. We'll hear him and David Frost go back and forth back in 1974 from Deer Lake, Pennsylvania. It was Ali's training camp, of course, for the Ali Foreman fight, the Rumble in the Jungle. Of course, Ali would go over there and silence everybody. I mean, nobody expected him to be George Foreman. Not me, not anybody. Nobody in their wildest dreams thought he could be over there and beat this big, ugly monster. I mean, George Foreman had knocked out Joe Frazier in 2 rounds. And, of course, Muhammad Ali had hell with Joe Frazier. Of course, 15 rounds losing that 15-round decision, March 8, 1971, in the fight of the century. No doubt about that, getting knocked down in the 15th round. Of course, Ali. But Ali was really hurting that 12th round. If you really want to talk about Ali getting hurt in that first Frazier fight, it was the 12th round. Check it out. You can watch it, of course, on YouTube.com. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, talk MMA and boxing this hour. We've got open phone lines around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Or the guilt-free no-commitment text line. The number, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. We are broadcasting live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. Of course, currently showing Mike Tyson's greatest knockouts. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right. The World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
What's the thing you would most like people to say about your life? He was a great champion or what? What would you like people to think about you when you've gone?
I'd like for them to say he took a few cups of love. He took one tablespoon of patience, one tablespoon, teaspoon of generosity, one pint of kindness. He took one quart of laughter, one pinch of concern, and then he mixed willingness with happiness. He added lots of faith, and he stirred it up well. Then he spread it over a span of a lifetime, and he served it to each and every deserving person he met.
Of course, Ali talking about, we'll hear a little bit later about Ali and David Frost, but straight up Muhammad Ali talking about the world in 1974, of course, and what he wanted people to remember him as. Of course, a lot of people have mixed feelings about Muhammad Ali. Of course, some people still feel that he was a draft. I mean, somebody told me, I was on an airplane a few years ago, says, you know, I was wearing a Muhammad Ali t-shirt, and the guy says to me, he goes, you know, he was a dredge, the draft dodger. He wasn't a draft dodger. Why? The fact that he didn't want to let him use his name to lead other young men to slaughter? I mean, that was an issue? Shouldn't have been an issue. Not in my mind. No doubt about that. Speaking of Mike Tyson, we're going back to Mike Tyson because that's what I'm getting the text here. You guys keep saying the Tyson fight. It's not a fight. It's an exhibition. In fact, I'm going to go through Mike Tyson. In fact, I was at Mike Tyson's last fight. Was it 2004 when he took on Kevin McBride? I'll get to the record in just a minute. Of course, Mike Tyson now coming back, the big
big time guy. I mean, you heard him in hour number one. He's out to hurt people. 50-6, been stopped 5 times, 44 KOs, been stopped 5 times. Think about that. But the McBride fight, when he lost to Kevin McBride in 2005, he said he had lost it in 1989. I mean, I asked him a question. I mean, when do you think he lost it? He said, I lost it in 1989. Of course, that was the last real big fight he won against Carl the Truth Williams before going over to Tokyo, taking in some geisha girls, not training all that seriously, or maybe he did train all that seriously, and Buster Douglas was just a better guy that night. But, you know, it wasn't just that last fight with Mike Tyson getting stopped by Kevin McBride, I mean, basically quitting between rounds. I mean, good Lord, woof, woof. He was barking like a dog. He did. He dogged out in that one. That was like June 11th, 2005. That's when I remember Leila Ali was on the stage on the dice afterwards. She had fought somebody, some hoboette or something like that, some girl that was really not all that worthy. So I said to her, hey, when are you going to fight Ann Wolf? Ann Wolf was the world champion in her weight at that point in time. She said, who? Yeah, that's how genuine Leila Ali was. Anyway, before the McBride fight, he lost to Danny Williams. If ever there was a hobo, I shouldn't say that. But Danny wasn't the most deserving guy in the entire world, and Danny Williams beat that. And, of course, before that fight, he knocked out Clifford Etienne in one round. That was no big surprise there because Etienne was really a cruiserweight. Before that, the loss to Lennox Lewis, of course, in 2002. So from 2002 to 2005, Mike Tyson went 1-3, and that one win was over Clifford Etienne. Before that, he beat Brian Nielsen in 2001. Of course, he had the no contest with Andrew Gallada, that wild fight. The Lou Savarese win. Before that, he beat a guy by the name of Julian Francis, who was 21-7. Who the hell is that? And of course, there was the Orland Norris fight at the MGM Grand. I'll never forget that. Why won't I forget it? Because it ended in a no contest in the first round when Mike Tyson tried to break Orland Norris's arm. Before that, it was a fat guy from South Africa. I'm talking about the former IBF champion, Franz Botha. And of course, the fight prior to that was back to 1997 with Mike Tyson, the bite fight. Of course, he weighs in 218 pounds. Evander Holyfield weighs in even 218 pounds. Both of these guys the same weight. Of course, it's the rematch. They're going to hook it up. What happens? Mike Tyson bites him not once, but twice. And of course, Mills Lane, the referee that night, he and I were broadcast partners. We had some great times together. We had some not so great times together. But one of the times I said to him, he had a couple of glasses of wine. It was the only time I ever saw Mills feeling good. In other words, Mills was always one of these, I'm always taking care of business. He'd have a glass of wine once in a while, but he was always taking care of business, always like a general, listen to that. But one night he had a couple of glasses of wine. I think we were in Cincinnati. And I said to him, do you think maybe you should have disqualified him after he bit Evander Holyfield's ear the first time? I mean, the second time he bit his ear off, bit a piece of it off. And he thought about that, and he said to me, he says, you know, I talked to Mark Ratner that night. He sort of like leaned on me that we didn't want to stop the fight then, right then and there, that it might have caused a riot, that people might have went crazy and this and that. And of course, it went, a couple of rounds, a round and a half more, and of course, Mike Tyson would bite him again and then spit Evander Holyfield's ear across the ring there. That was a bit of a shocker, no doubt about that. But that was 1997, okay? Mike Tyson, of course, lost the first fight to Evander Holyfield. Got stopped in the 11th round. Of course, that was in 1996. Before that, it was Bruce Seldon. Of course, Bruce Seldon was that guy from Atlantic City. They called him the Atlantic City Express. Of course, he took a dive. The guy got hit on the shoulder. I mean, I was there at that fight. I couldn't believe it. It was 1996, and Mike Tyson's coming back. You know, he fought we'll go through the guys that he fought, but this was supposed to be a step up in competition before the Holyfield fight, taking on Bruce Seldon, because Bruce Seldon was a guy from Atlantic City, just put it to you like that. Anyway, he went in one round. Before that, it was Frank Bruno. Frank Bruno froze. Frank Bruno froze in three rounds. Bruno was a guy that he could box, but if he was scary. He was scary. Frank Bruno, you could scare. So Tyson scared the spit out of him. When I say spit with an H. Of course, before that, it was Buster Mathis Jr. Knocked him out in three rounds. Of course, I was there for that fight. That was the Spectrum in Philadelphia. Of course, that's where they locked me in the Spectrum. I was doing radio afterwards on KMBR, I think, and I was the only one still in the arena at ringside. I did some TV for Don King that night. And afterwards, I was doing a radio show because it was like, you know, live on the West Coast, but live on the West Coast. We made it late on the East Coast. So I was in the Philadelphia Spectrum, and they shut off all the lights. On the air, I kid you not, they shut off all the lights in the arena. I had to crawl out. I crawled out of that place. I mean it, on my hands and knees. I crawled out of that place. But of course, that was also the fight where Panama Lewis got bowled. Panama Lewis was the guy that took the stuffing out of Luis Resto's gloves back in 19, what year was that? Of course, during 1983, when Duran fought Davey Moore, of course, that was on the undercard. He took the stuffing, the padding out of his gloves. Billy Collins was, you know, permanently injured, but Luis Resto, he wasn't able to ever fight again. But Panama Lewis was licensed, and this is what got me upset. It was when we were in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, and I saw Panama, and I was with Don King. I didn't care. If I was Don, said Don tried to pull me off. No. Anyway, of course, Panama had committed the biggest atrocity in all of boxing when he took the stuffing out of gloves that he didn't need to. In other words, one guy was hitting a guy with just hand wraps wrapped in leather. That's all they were. I'm talking about the Luis Resto's gloves. The gloves disappeared, much like the gloves with Aaron Pryor in the first Alexis Arguello fight back from 1982. Yeah, those gloves disappeared. Pryor had them on in the ring, but Pryor doesn't have them now, and they were never seen after they were taken off Aaron Pryor in the ring tonight. What is the common equation between both those fights? Panama Lewis. So anyway, Panama and I are like nose to nose. We're in the elevator, and I want to say something in the elevator. You know, I really don't want to, because I don't like this guy. And I mean, he's a piece of spit. I was getting spit with an H. So I don't say nothing in the elevator. And then we get out of the elevator, and I think he thinks that I'm not going to say something because he knows I'd talk smack on. I talked some smack about him on both radio and TV in the past. I did it on Don King Productions one time, and Don said to me, "You got opinions about Panama, huh? Didn't tell me I'd had bad opinions." See, that's the thing with Don King. He never ever assailed anything I said on the air. Never told me what to say, and I would say anything I wanted. I never was censored or anything like that. Okay, but he never assailed me for anything I said on the air. He just was, you know, and people say to me, How can you like that guy? He killed a couple of people. Yeah, I understand that, but it's not how he treated other people. It's how he treated you. I mean, the guy treated me good. There's just no doubt about it. He treated me really good. Took care of my daughter when I did televised fights for him. Of course, he lined up and had nannies ready. I had my own nanny, but he had nannies ready. I mean, he was a great guy to me. And people can't understand why he wasn't. Back to Mike Tyson. Before the Buster Mathis fight, of course, was a comeback fight with Peter McNeely, the pizza guy. You saw how that ended. That wasn't pretty, was it? Of course, it ended like in the first round. The pizza guy took a dive. I mean, he got hit, whatever. Kind of stuff. And of course, Tyson hadn't fought for, 4 years before that? He had the two fights with Donovan Ruddick. So what I'm trying to tell you is Mike Tyson hasn't been around since 1989, 89, 99, 2000. We're talking, you know, that's a long time. That's a long time. And, you know, he's picking a guy that's got a soft chin in Roy Jones. Roy Jones, not the greatest fighter in the world, not anymore, of course. At one point in time, he had lightning-fast reflexes, and that's how he was able to beat everybody. The fact he was able to exploit your ring slower than he is, okay? But he can't do that anymore. Of course, once he got hit on the chin by Antonio Tarver, it was all over. I mean, Roy, you ready? Remember what Tarver told him that night? Hey, Roy, you got any excuses tonight? Then he knocked him out like a minute and a half later. That's the way Tarver did things. Tarver was a bad dude back at that point in time, and he knew he had Roy Jones's number. Speaking of Roy Jones, he's the opponent here. He is a perfect foil for Mike Tyson. Why do I say he's a perfect foil? Because he's a smaller guy. He's a little bit faster, supposedly a little bit faster. But get this, he don't take a punch too well. So whether it's 12-ounce gloves or not, when Mike Tyson makes contact, he'll look to make contact, of course, I think, with the body first, the arms and that kind of good stuff. That's what you want to do. When you're away from the ring a long time, at least that's what I try to do when I get back in the ring, and you try to spar with somebody, I don't want guys hitting me back, but you want to make contact. In other words, you want to make contact. And I think it's real important that somebody makes contact as far as Mike Tyson is concerned to see if Tyson wants to take it. And then you've got Roy Jones who can't take it. So this one guy, does he want to take it? The other guy can't take it. This is what this big exhibition is all about. One guy can't, well, one guy won. Straight up, we'll see what happens. Tyson and Roy Jones, the exhibition set for 8 rounds. Muhammad Ali upcoming in our next segment. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, and now broadcasting live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
I'm just ready to get it on and crush this guy's skull.
Spoke of strangers that don't speak to a bear. Kept on trying, buying time, not waiting on fate.
Now more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Just what do you think of him as a fighter, huh?
Well, his footwork's lousy.
He can't counter punch. His timing stinks, and he doesn't breathe properly.
But you like him as a person.
Well, he has a nice smile.
The East Bay Soul here. They kick ass, man. Of course, Greg Adams, one of the founding members of Tower of Power, one of my boys from Westmore High School here in Daly City, California. Graduate 1968, gave up a shot at the Juilliard School of Music to join Tower of Power at 17, and the rest is history. So East Bay Soul, check them out. They got two albums, East Bay Soul and East Bay Soul 2.0. Check it out at eastbaysoul.com. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. You know, somebody shot me a text just now regarding Joe Frazier, and I made a couple of comments about Joe Frazier. Listen, Joe Frazier was a great heavyweight, no doubt about that, but he had his own style, his own unique style, and he tried to make his son Marvis, who was really a good boxer, a good stick-and-move boxer, he tried to turn him into Joe Frazier, a knockout puncher, and Marvis couldn't punch like that, okay, so he got Marvis hurt. Anyway, he got Marvis hurt with Larry Holmes, put Marvis into a fight with Larry Holmes, and of course, I thought that Joe should have been arrested for child abuse for that fight. At the same time, Larry should have been arrested for attempted murder. I mean, holy cow, although he was telling the referee to stop the fight, that was just this, an ass-kicking of monumental proportion, of course. And Joe would also put him in with Mike Tyson. Wouldn't last too long against Mike Tyson. What I'm trying to tell you is the greatest fighters in the world don't become the greatest managers in the world. And Joe Frazier was a horrible manager. Joe had a drinking problem. I told you about that. Every time I saw him, you could smell booze on him. It was just part of like Joe Frazier's aroma. I mean, he didn't have perfume. He didn't wear a cologne per se. He drank. I mean, every time I saw him for like the past 25 years of his life, every time I saw him, there was booze. Didn't matter what time it was of the day. You smelled booze on Joe Frazier. Case in point, we're doing a fight at the Omni, I think, in Atlanta, Georgia. In fact, it was Evander Holyfield and Vaughn Bean, I think, for the World Heavyweight Championship. I think it was Vaughn Bean. Anyway, I was interviewing Goldberg ringside. But, you know, I try to put it to these guys that when you come to a certain point in your life, you've got to say, I can't fight anymore. I mean, I'd love to fight. I run. You know, I still do shadow boxing. Yesterday, I lost a unanimous decision in 6 rounds of my shadow. The shadow beat me up for 6 rounds. After 6 rounds with 30-second breaks, I was like dead to the world. And then I did some road work. But that doesn't mean I'm in shape to fight. And I just don't think that Mike Tyson's in shape to fight at the age of 52. Or 54, whatever he is. But the bottom line is, he's an old dude. He hasn't fought since almost 30 years. Come on, man, give me a break. But everybody's going to watch it, right? Because it's a freak show. And like Larry said, there's a sucker born every minute. There's a lot of suckers born every minute. Straight up, a guy that wasn't a sucker, but he was a bit controversial in his time. Of course, we'll go back to 1974. It was Deer Lake, Pennsylvania, of course, the training camp for Muhammad Ali and George Foreman, the Rumbling Jungle, and David Frost and Ali go back and forth.
Everything hangs out with his own. White people are cultures different from black people. Puerto Ricans and Indonesians cannot integrate. Egyptians and Germans cannot integrate. Australians and Mexicans cannot integrate. They have different foods. They have different music, different cultures. See, you white and I'm black. If white people have a party tonight and black people have a party, the party will be 100% different. The music. I go in a white restaurant. We integrate today, white. You go in a white restaurant, you got to look all day on the jukebox to find some music.
No. At our party, we'll have Aretha Franklin, Stevie Wonder.
Let me tell you now. If I go Prayer jukebox in a white restaurant, anybody black or Italian here, you got to look all over that box for some black music. Hank Snow, Johnny Cash,
Josh White.
All kind of names I ain't never heard of. You know, when that train comes around that mountain. When that train comes. And that tough time around there. So what I'm saying is, ain't nothing wrong with that music, but that fits the white culture. You go in our joints, oh baby, don't leave. Oh, I cried all night. Who's that running out of my back door, honey? But see, those are problems. Then I go to Chinese restaurant, clean, ting, tang, tong, tong, ting. So we can't integrate.
Yeah.
We ain't gonna never have no peace. The culture, the nature's different. I don't hate you. We can eat in your restaurant. We want to marry your women. We got your women now. It ain't nothing we can't do today. But these things the dog got. I see dogs on television eating out of the same plate with white people. I see dogs in the buses, and they do everything with the dogs. So I ain't getting nothing the dog ain't got.
So really, ain't nothing in this integration. I need some land. I need some jobs. My people need jobs. We need something so we can build and do for ourselves, and we must have some land. 40 million people. You know, it's a lot of Negroes just in New York and Cleveland, Baltimore, Washington, California. It's a lot of black. Woo, that's a whole nation. 40 million, man. They don't tell you the truth about that. They want us to stop having babies. They give them birth control. They're paying black women not to have babies now.
It's 40 million, not 20 million?
Yeah, they're paying black women not to have babies now. They got all kind of plans to stop our race.
Everyone.
So when we know all of this,
getting into birth
so now a man with my knowledge, what can you tell a man like me now? What's your suggestion? Ask your question. Okay, you talking to me, not a dumb Negro or pork chop eater, don't know the truth. I'm free now. I woke up. Now, what are you going to tell me now? I done gave you my solution, some land of my own, doing something for myself like you, England and America do. Now, I know you're not against the black man. I know you're not against me having my land, are you?
Not
I know you
all.
English the ruled and slaved forever for a long time. But do you still today don't want me to have my own country and build for myself and govern myself? Would you think that's bad if we thought like that? What's your solution to my problem? 1974, then you all just, some white man just flew from New York to England in an hour, less than 2 hours. You all are so progressive. You're walking around on other planets. Now, today, I'm intelligent too now. What's your suggestion? What should be my movement? Integrate?
Yeah, equal rights in a mixed society.
In this society, where you still own the government, you still own the train station, the railroad plant, the electric plant, these television cameras, you still make all the food, you control everything, and I'm like a leech on a dog's back. All I can do is just wait for you. I can't do nothing for myself. Integrating in your society don't mean I'm doing nothing for myself. You doing it all. I want to do something for myself. I'm tired of depending on you. You might get broke one day. Your stores might close. Your gas pumps might cut off again. I'm relying on you now. Can I have my own land and country?
Well, you've got your own freedom here. For instance, I know you're luckier than many black people in America, but you're your own boss.
I'm speaking for my nation.
I know, I appreciate
that. If I was representing just me, I wouldn't be talking like this, because I got it made. I'm talking for my brothers.
But I just don't see how, Mommy. I don't see how you can slice up America into bits and get all the whites in one area and all the blacks in another.
Then we leave then. We leave.
But they'd miss you.
I know it.
One last question. At the end of your life, whether it was Allah who was saying it, Elijah Muhammad, or whether it was something that someone wrote about you after you'd gone, what's the thing you would most like people to say about your life? He was a great champion, or what? What would you like people to think about you when you've gone?
I'd like for them to say he took a few cups of love. He took one tablespoon of patience, one teaspoon of generosity. One pint of kindness. He took one quart of laughter, one pinch of concern, and then he mixed willingness with happiness. He added lots of faith, and he stirred it up well. Then he spread it over a span of a lifetime, and he served it to each and every deserving person he met.
Muhammad Ali, thank you very much.
You know, I was coming into work today. I call this work, work here at the radio station. And I was coming into work today, and I brought some food to one of my homeless guys. Call him Holmes. His name is Joe. Of course, he actually related to a friend that I went to high school with in South San Francisco. I have no idea how this crossed anyway. The bottom line is, I brought him some food, I brought him some food and some coffee and this and that, and basically he was just waking up there on the sidewalk. And then I drove like a block further, and there was a guy that was worse off. So it's like, damn, man, it just doesn't seem, it's incredible. It just doesn't seem to be getting any better, no whatsoever. I mean, everywhere I go, people seem to be more and more and more and more and more and more on the street. And especially, I'm seeing that here in the United States, especially in California. Anyway, Muhammad Ali, 56-5, give him some props. Only stopped that one time, of course, against Larry Holmes, October 2nd, 1980. I was there. I cried. I was in tears. That was a devastating loss for me. It just was. I mean, I knew that he was the underdog. I knew that, Father Time was going to probably take its course that night and that he wasn't going to win against Larry Holmes. But the fact that he failed so miserably in all 10 rounds against Holmes before being stopped, of course, Angelo not letting him come out, Angelo Dundee and Bundini Brown not letting him come out for the 11th round, even though he wanted to in that 15-round bout fight. It was my first foray into Las Vegas, and it was probably the saddest time. First time to Vegas, saddest time in Vegas. The funeral of Muhammad Ali, October 2nd, 1980. And, of course, that same day was the day that actor Steve McQueen had passed away. And I remember as a kid, he was filming Bullet here in the city by the bay. And he actually stood and came over and, like, shook our hands. We were on Army Street here in the city by the bay. So Steve McQueen, Muhammad Ali, both going down October 2nd, 1980. You are tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide. Check it. You're inside looking at the world of boxing and MMA. Live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Channel 211, and of course, live on SportsByline.com.
Hardest hustle anything is boxing, though. I don't know what you do for a living, but pretty sure ain't nobody punching you all in your eye. I watched one fight. Roy Jones got hit so hard, my TV moved. He was asleep like he got knocked out of the club. The ref was like 241, 242. Roy was snoring. Like he was really knocked out. He was laying there so long, they had to start another fight. Roy was still there. Fighters had to dance around Roy.
The Great Earthquake, of course, comedian extraordinaire there on HBO. God, man, Earthquake, I haven't seen him. Whereas in a club, there are no clubs. I used to go to all the clubs here in San Francisco, Punchline, and go on and on. But the bottom line is, the COVID virus even shut down comedy clubs. Will that ever happen again? Will the world ever be the same again? I mean, good Lord, I was thinking about that today. You know, like the pool parties we used to have in Vegas. I dug the pool parties because Don King would throw some parties. HBO threw some great parties. Showtime threw some great parties. The Las Vegas Hilton threw some great parties. I remember one time at the Mardi Gras, John Luss, my cousin, threw myself and Hector Martinez in the pool. And then, of course, we had some great parties at Bally's with Don King and, like, the women out there, like off, like hundreds of women, and we have like the area cordoned off. This is nothing but VIPs, the best booze, the best food. Of course, I didn't drink. And of course, there was also the Aladdin Hotel. We used to take over the Aladdin Hotel when we came to Vegas. But the one time I remember the good time at the pool was when I was sitting there with my soon-to-be ex-wife. And her and I are going back and forth. And she's being an ex-wife, okay? She's acting totally like an ex-wife. I mean, just acting totally like an ex-wife, a future ex-wife. There's no doubt about it, okay? And here's what I'm saying. I'm biting my tongue. So anyway, guess who walks by? David Copperfield. Perfect time. Perfect. Please, Mr. Copperfield, stop. Can I get a question for you? Can you make her disappear? Can you just make her disappear? Please, right now. Please. She didn't take too kindly to that, but I was dead serious. Bottom line, it cost me some money a little bit later as far as the divorce is concerned. Now, back to money. I talked about the pimp earlier. Dana White. Good Lord. He be pimping. That's right. Last night's UFC Vegas card, of course, it was on ESPN Plus, only had 8 fights. A number of bouts were canceled due to fighters being withdrawn from competition both before and during the weigh-ins and during the actual show. In the past, when fighters have had their bouts canceled, but they have still weighed in successfully, the UFC has compensated those fighters with their full show money. However, according to UFC President Dana White, that might not be the case for those involved in canceled fights from last night. Come on, man. I mean, he hasn't made it. There isn't enough money for him in the dollar. He's getting 88 cents in the minds of some people. Maybe get more than that. But the bottom line is he's getting like 9 cents of every... He's giving them 9 cents of every dollar. And he's bitching about that. He won't pay people if they've got to show up and weigh in. Imagine that. That's like Cuddy showing up for 40 hours of work and them saying no check. You showed up at the weigh-in. You've made the weight. You've already did the training. You've sacrificed. It's not your fault that the UFC wasn't able to put a fight together. The UFC contracted you to fight somebody. You showed up there. You're ready to fight. You're not going to get paid? Man, Dana, I'm telling you, Dana White should be arrested. He should be arrested. He is the one, he's a crook. And as I said, pimps, the pimps I met in San Francisco, they got nothing on him. They got nothing on him. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I guess the next UFC card I know is going to be UFC 252, of course. That's Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic going a third time. Why they want to go a third time? I don't know. Miocic's sort of an unheralded champion. Hasn't brought a whole lot of spark to the heavyweight division. Of course, he beat he beat Francis Ngannou, and everybody thought that Francis was going to win that fight, but I didn't think so. I thought that the boxing pedigree, the fact he's a former Ohio State Golden Glove champion, Stip Miocic, would carry him well in that fight, but it wasn't his boxing, it was his ground game. He took Ngannou to the ground, and Ngannou couldn't handle being on the ground. So anyway, outside of the Ngannou fight, of course, then he lost to Cormier, and then he came back and he beat Cormier. I'm talking about Stip Miocic. He had a detached retina in between this last fight with Cormier, and of course, this fight now, the third one. Do I really want to see this fight? Yawn. I don't want to see this fight. I can't get up for that fight, but I can get up for Khabib coming back October 24th. Of course, the undefeated lightweight champion, 24-0, 48-0, 90-0. I wouldn't put Cuddy in the octagon with him because I feel for Cuddy's life. You know what I'm saying? But Justin Gaethje figures, you know what? I'm the interim champion. I'm sort of like the guy that's like the B guy here. I'm willing to take the chance. I'm willing to fight Khabib anywhere in the world. Khabib, of course, 24-0, 94-0. No matter what it is, he's never lost a round in the gym. He's never lost a fight. His father just died. The guy's a little bit pissed off. You know, not the guy you want to be fighting, but they're going to hook this up for the lightweight championship, of course, between Justin Gaethje and Khabib. Khabib is an unbelievable fighter. He just isn't. But the biggest advantage he has is that he's bigger than guys. And when I say bigger, I mean much bigger. Much bigger. I mean, we have weight divisions in combat sports for a reason. Because size only matters in two things. Pornography and combat sports. In combat sports, we have weight divisions that separate each guy. In fact, you weigh in at 155, shouldn't you fight close to 155? Well, Khabib doesn't fight at 155. Khabib comes in at 155 and fights at 180, close to 180 pounds. He's weighed as much as 178 pounds, I've been told, by a couple of different people. So 178 pounds for a guy that weighs in at 155. Imagine that! Come on! You can't move up in weight. I mean, why doesn't he just move up in weight? He's cheating. They weigh these guys in the day before. Yeah, they say they do it in boxing as well. But nobody gains that much weight in boxing. They just don't. But they can do it in the UFC. And, of course, the UFC has said a bit rigged. I think that the fact that they were sold for $4,200 million last year or a year and a half ago to that corporation, I think they got took. But Khabib and Justin Gaethje going to hook it up, or it's going to go down UFC 254. No side October 24th, 2020, provided neither of them get the virus in between now and then. Speaking of virus, boxing, of course, taking its toll. I want to mention the fact that, no, I can't say that. Somebody in the boxing world has passed in the past couple of weeks, and I was going to bring it up, and I really wanted to bring it up, and I'm going back and forth here fighting with myself because their relatives really don't want it brought up that they died of COVID. I mean, what's the shame in dying of COVID? But there's somebody that's notable in the boxing game, and they don't want to cop to the fact that they died of COVID. It's not. It's like COVID has become the new AIDS. Are you ashamed of it or something like that? It's a virus. You didn't have any chance. At least with AIDS, there was sexual contact, so you sort of initiated the possibility you were going to get the disease. But with COVID-19, nobody knows. I mean, nobody knows whatsoever. So at the end of the day, it's still invisible. Please wear your mask. That's all I say. And don't shoot people. Don't slap people. Don't beat people up because they're wearing a mask and they're not wearing a mask. Listen, these other countries are kicking it. And I'm reading this stuff. They're kicking it because everybody was wearing a mask. Okay? They shut down 95% of those countries. They only shut down 50% of the United States when they shut it down at the max. So 50% of the countries in lockdown, 50% observing quarantine, 50% not. You can't win the game like that. It's like you got to have 95% of the people involved. So we're like 45% off, and until then, it's going to be mass hysteria here in the United States. I don't think it's ever going to get any better. I really don't. The vaccine, as I said, 2 years away. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing, the MMA. I'm looking at 168 pounds. Of course, I was hot on this division at one point in time because there's a guy named David Benavidez. I thought that he was going to be the guy. I mean, I said to myself, man, he's got looks. He's Mexican. He fights. He has an exciting style. He punches hard. I mean, he's going to be the guy, but he had a cocaine problem. And, of course, coke is no joke. He's 22-0, of course, coming to us out of Phoenix, Arizona, but he was fighting out of Central California there for a while. And what can I say, you know? He's 30 years old now. I mean, no, I take that back. He's 23 years old now. He's got to think about time on the clock. 22 and zip. He wants to talk smack at 168. Danny Jacobs is supposed to be the guy at 168 as far as the America is concerned, but the best fighter at 168 right now is probably Callum Smith, of course, 27-0 out of the UK. Good fighter, no doubt about that. Billy Joe Saunders, is he the opponent for Canelo? There is no opponent for Canelo. The September fight is on hold or been canceled, or I don't know what to say, but I don't think Canelo is going to fight in September. It just doesn't appear that's going to happen. Of course, DAZN has got to be losing money. It's got to be losing money. I mean, because the bottom line is they expected to be adding people, not having to lose people, adding people with Canelo fighting. And Canelo's not going to fight because Canelo's not going to get the money. I guess it's not enough money to get $35 million from a TV network. You got to have the live gate too or whatever. Bottom line is, at the end of the day, Canelo Alvarez is not going to fight in September. Bad for boxing because pound for pound, he's the guy that turns the crank. He's the pay-per-view king. There's no doubt about that. Give him his props. Only lost one fight in his entire life, and it was a fight, of course, of Floyd Mayweather. And Mayweather at that point in time was so far advanced to the one-footed Saul Alvarez at that point in time. I mean, Alvarez had no movement whatsoever. Floyd just moved around him out, boxed him all night. No big thing there. No great shame in losing there. No doubt about that. And speaking of Floyd Mayweather, he weighed in this week on Roy Jones and Mike Tyson hooking up. And, of course, he's all for it, and he's willing to open the opportunity he might come back one more time. Please, Floyd, please, 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 don't ever come back. Don't come. I don't know who wants you to come back. You were never that exciting when you were here. If you were a porno movie, you would have got a shut off many times because guess what? You never delivered the money shot. You just never did. I mean, they called you money, but you never delivered the money shot. Guys hoping to deliver the money shot. Of course, boxing's coming back. ESPN Plus going to go on the 7th with Chris Billiam Smith taking on Nathan Thurley. These guys are fighting at 200 pounds. The 11th, ESPN Plus going to go with Joan O'Carroll versus Maxie Hughes. Those are fighting at 135. And the 14th is the return of Telemundo Boxing, baby. That's right. I still can't understand why they never hired me to do the English and the Spanish broadcast. What I mean by that is there's a secondary audio programming, SAP. You can hit that little button, right? So if you're watching something in English, you hit that little button, you can watch it and you can listen to it in Spanish, right? But I kept going. I went to all the networks, Telemundo, Univision, the whole nine yards. I said, let me do a second audio broadcast in audio only in English and see what happens. I mean, maybe you'll double up the ratings this and that. They just weren't hip to that. They didn't want to go with it. No way, no how. And I mean, I begged. I remember going to one guy at the Univision headquarters and laying it out for him and laying out the numbers for him and the whole nine yards and saying, you're probably going to gain like 35 to 40% of your viewership just to begin with, blah, 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 blah. And if we hype it up and we advertise it, you like almost double. He didn't want to hear it. Didn't want to hear it. Only wanted to go with the Spanish broadcast. But Telemundo coming back the 14th of August. Of course, Telemundo taking over back Ricardo Hindu Espinosa taking on Brando Valdez. Those guys are fighting at 122. And coming back on the 14th, the zone's going to go with Felix Cash and Jason Wellborn. Of course, that's a middleweight bout. The 15th, boxing coming alive. Carl Frampton coming alive. Is he coming alive? He's got a guy named Double V, Varum Varahan. This is a super wet featherweight bout. Of course, Frampton, the former champion, 122 pounds. When he moved up to 126, I thought it was a bit much. When he moved up to 130, I thought that was way too much. And on August 15th, the pound-for-pound greatest woman in boxing. God, that's hard for me to say that because women's boxing is so pathetic. It is. For the most part, it's pathetic. It's watching paint dry. But Cecilia Brakes is going to fight Jessica Maschigal for the undisputed female welterweight title. She's like the champion of every sanctioning body in the entire world. She can fight, and there's no doubt about it, but there's nobody really that can fight her. Can Jessica fight? We'll see what happens when these two chicks hook it up on the 15th on the Zone, DAZN. If you haven't got it yet, I think it's going to cost you $20 a month. If you're like been farmed in a little bit earlier, you were like me, you were around for a year, I think they give it to you at $10 for a month. But the bottom line is it's going to change on January 1st. Everybody will be paying $20. August 15th, Showtime Championship Boxing coming back with the aforementioned David Benavidez. Of course, the Cokehead defending the WBC Super Middleweight title against a name Romer Angulo. Romer, can he fight? We'll find out. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Get funky.
And made me cry, and I
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Mighty horns of the incredible Tower of Power. This time it's real. Of course, this show's been real. 35, make that 36 plus years now. You can catch us live each and every Saturday and Sunday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, of course, and a host of other networks, including Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 211. Straight up, Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time. Of course, the podcasts are always available at anchor.com. You can always listen to any of the shows, any of the archive shows at anchor.com. Check us out, Ring Talk Live Worldwide at anchor.com. Coming up later next month, the 22nd of the month, big fight down in Australia. Tim Zhu, the son of former world champion Kostya Zhu. Why did he retire? He got old. 15-0 now, 11 KOs fighting at 154, taking on the former champion at 147. Talk about Jeff Horn. Horn comes in at 20-2 with a draw on 13 KOs. The key note here is that Horn's been stopped two times in his career, and Zhu's a bigger guy. I expect Zhu to stop him, no doubt about that. Now, people say to me, do you miss Las Vegas? I haven't been to Las Vegas now about 2.5-3 years. I really don't, because it's not the Vegas that I used to know. I mean, it's not. I used to be able to go to guys' houses, and these guys have all died off. I mean, Davey Pearl, of course, the referee for the first Leonard Hearns fight. I mean, he was the bellboy there in Vegas. He was Sonny Liston's last manager. I mean, I was tight with him. I was tight with Johnny Taco. Chuck Minker, all these guys have passed on, so there's not a whole lot left in Las Vegas for me. Kevin Perry's still there, Johnny Sigg's still there, but outside of that, all the old godfathers I hung with, they've passed on. So what I'm trying to say is, may they rest in peace. I was thinking about them in depth this week, especially, man, my retired mentor, and of course, Johnny Taco, when he had to cut off his foot after getting diabetes and having not to be able to go into the ringside gym there in Las Vegas. You heard him on this show. His heart was broken 1 week before he died. So straight up, my hat's off to all the people that have appeared in the past that I miss so much, including my parents. And, of course, if you lose one parent, that's one thing. You lose two parents, it's something you never forget. Remember, your parents, you need to always be a credit to your parents. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You are a production of Sports Byline. I love you so.